All right. Hey, everybody. This is Stu Smith with another Two Through and After series with a special guest, Dan Skidmore, former CCT combat controller. I let him talk about his journey going into that world and what all the great things that he's done, as well as some of the cool things that he's done after the military. And you may recognize him if you do GORUCK challenges, because he told me he's done over 100 of them, which is pretty amazing. to do. So, Dan, thanks for joining me. I appreciate your time on this.
Well, thanks for having me on, man. It's I've listened to a bunch of your episodes, and it's always cool to rap with other guys, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much once again. Thanks for your time. I appreciate this one. So, like I said, I've never interviewed anybody in the CCT world. Done some JTAC type stuff, but you guys are a little bit different. Explain a little bit about what the CCT is in the Air Force and how that differs from some of the other jobs that are similar.
Okay, so Air Force combat controllers, you know, are solely special operations, and our job basically that air-to-ground interface. So everything from people, you know, telling aircraft where to drop packages, people, bombs. So we do the warheads on foreheads, and that's the JTAC piece, and that's been super hot, and like, you know, that's the sexy part of the job. Well, the other side of the job is the air traffic control. And so all combat controllers go to FAA certified air traffic control school to learn how to do everything at an airport, right? And so that kind of ties in that larger, broad picture of special operations to set up, you know, four operating bases or you know, really a leap pad to get further into the fight. We also do surveys and some unilateral missions together. But it's primarily supporting Army, SF, and SEALs.
Ah, that's really cool. So who were you before you joined the military? What made you want to serve in that capacity?
Man, before I joined the military, I was just a high school kid. I was in sports basically through school and kept me out of a lot of trouble. I decided to not go to college. I could have went for like a full ride at Ohio University. My dad works for the university, and so I would have had tuition paid for, but I decided that, you know, I was just going to waste all my time on women and booze, and I needed some direction. And, I mean, hey, isn't it, everything else is wasted?
I mean, right? I won't lie to you, you know, college life is, you know, a little crazy sometimes.
Man, well, and I wasn't really ready for that, and so I needed a little bit more direction and a push, and I wanted to be pushed and tested physically and mentally. And at the time, you know, I didn't really know anything about, well, I wasn't really that interested in the SEALs, but I knew that I wanted a technical job. And so I went into the Air Force recruiter and I said, hey, what's the hardest thing you got? And he gave me two pamphlets, Pararescue and Combat Control. And he said, do you want to make messes or do you want to clean up messes? And it sounded like a lot of fun to be, you know, on target and in the action, as opposed to like cleaning things up, it would be the pararescue side of the house. And so I went that route, man, and started training really hard.
That's really cool. So what were some of the things that you did to prepare yourself for that journey? Because it is a pretty diverse journey, right? As far as fitness, where you have to swim, you have to run, you got calisthenics, you ruck a lot.
So yeah, for sure. It mirrors, and it really, the preparation is so that we can deploy on the team with SEALs and SF guys. So we have to be prepared to go to free fall school. We got to be prepared to go to Ranger school if they want to send us. We got to be prepared to go to dive school. And so the biggest priority for me was getting in a pool and getting very confident with the water, with underwater swims. And I think I tied into a couple, you know, basically learning everything I could about the sister services selection process, because combat control really wasn't that publicized. Now there's, you know, so many, you can find out everything, right? But I thought that if I could learn from the other services, see what they're doing and their tests, I'd be ready for it.
Sure.
And so I had learned, hey, you got to do a 50 meter underwater at BUDS. Well, that's the standard. I need to be able, I think I read that from something that you might have posted in like 2005.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, I saw that and I was like, hey, well, I got to be prepared to do that front flip in the pool and hit a 50, and I'm going to train to that. And so everything else, hey, well, cardio, right? You got to build your baseline of endurance, and then calisthenics. And so that became the the focus for my training, and CrossFit wasn't really on the radar at the time. And so that was spin run. I didn't really get into rucking, and I wish that I would have before I went to training. Yeah. But man, I spent a lot of time in the pool and got pretty fast. So.
Well, that pool was a smart addition for you because it is kind of front end loaded in your training, correct? Like where you're going to get tested in the pool right up front. And that's a big attrition marker for your world. Am I correct?
Definitely. Absolutely. And you know, hey, the water's a great equalizer. And yeah. So they find out real quick who wants to be there and then who just wants to like have a beard and grow their hair out and say that they're in soft. But there's, you know, there's only so many jobs that require dive school later on. And so they use that as a, you know, they really use not breathing underwater as a way to test guys' will on target. Cause I know now in combat, like, hey, if you're getting shot at, there's no quitting, right? You can't just like, I'm just going to tap out here. And so taking you to the very edge of stress, oh, hey, are you willing to pass out underwater to achieve this goal? And so I think that's part of the reason why they do that.
I would agree. I mean, that's definitely the same world I'm used to as well. How would you say, what was the big challenge in the water for you in CCT? Was it treading? Was it underwater skills? Was it the one thing I really like that I know you guys do in the Air Force is the treading buddy breathing test with a snorkel.
That's the one.
That is so freaking hard, man. I've done it a few times to help some of my Air Force guys, and that's a gut check.
Oh yeah, and I think it was a couple minutes buddy breathing. And you're really just tied onto a buddy. And I'm not sure if the SEALs do this, but, you know, just holding hands and holding snorkels and back and forth.
No, we don't do that. It's strictly Air Force. And like I said, I've tried it, and it's tough.
Well, the iteration, you know, and they have certain parameters that they say, hey, this is fair, right? But they're going to cap the snorkel. They're going to put it underwater. They're going to take you down to the bottom and roll you around or rip you back and forth. Or they're just going to clap the water super hard next to your face. And really, I think the reason they do that is to simulate being under a 60 or being under a CV-22 or an Osprey in the water right before you're going to get picked up. And that backsplash coming down on you in the water is huge. And so having the confidence to only get like partial breath, because the whole iteration of a couple minutes, you're only getting like maybe a 20-30% breath. You're never getting a full inhale and full exhale, and you're relying on a buddy to keep you alive. And so that iteration always, you know, I never failed it, but man, it was always stress going into it.
Yeah, it's a great test. You know, it's something that I think it's a very useful skill, you know, even if you're not going into the Air Force, to be able to buddy breathe with a snorkel, or just tread water by yourself and take the snorkel in and out of your mouth, and just, you know, just little things for water confidence, because many of these spec ops jobs, you know, that go into the water will have some form of very challenging water skill that you have to master. It doesn't matter if you're Marine Corps, Air Force, Army, Navy, you know, there's something that makes it challenging. You know, whether it's a 50 meter underwater, it's a pool comp with scuba gear on. It sounds like for me, and a good comparison is like our scuba pool comp is very similar to your snorkel buddy breathing.
Right.
You know, which you'll get the pool comp too when you go to dive school. Yeah,
you know, definitely. But you know, to simulate that, I think that drill is huge. And now even like through scuba diving with my wife and like with Force Blue, which I'd love to talk about later on.
Yeah.
I just go down to the bottom of the ocean and take my regulator out and then just signal, hey, let's do this and test it out for as long as we can. And I actually I was practicing it and then finally like on one of these little coral reef restorations that we were doing, I ran out of air. And so I started breathing off of my wife's other regulator, and it was basically buddy breathing the whole time. And if we hadn't practiced that beforehand, you know, we would have had to stop our mission early. But we were able to continue doing it and just kind of be comfortable being a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And, So training the drills before you actually have to do it, man. It's been a lot of fun.
It's critical. You gotta train for contingencies, you know, even when you're going wreck diving, because things can go upside down real quick.
Oh yeah.
So no matter what you're doing. So that's really cool. So let's talk a little bit about, I guess, your journey through training. How long is that? What's the pipeline like for you? And then let's talk about your teams and deployments, if you don't mind.
Okay. So it's a 2-year pipeline. You're going to go in, you know, go through a little suck fest for a couple of weeks and then go to air traffic control school. Basically learning all the ins and outs of air traffic control.
Now, how stressful is that? I've heard that is one of the world's most stressful jobs.
Man, I tell you what, that was probably the hardest part in learning all of those new concepts, because it's really like a 4-dimensional environment, right? Where you're dealing with time, space, altitude, and then talking to all of these moving assets. And so learning those concepts for me was pretty challenging. But once you get it, man, you train to a certain standard, and it's a pretty involved course. But it's a lot of fun in the way that they do it. That's a huge part of the job. And like, man, eventually training to the point where you're going to jump in to an unmarked DZ and maybe like a farmer's field, set out a couple of lights, and then call in a small aircraft for an assault team, and then jump on and, you know, go do whatever mission you got to do. But at the time, like when you're training to do that, well, one of my actual deployments was down to Haiti after that earthquake in 2010. Yeah. And so I went down there with the whole team and controlled all of their traffic for 2 weeks with a small special tactics element. And we had more air traffic controlled than the Berlin airlift.
Wow. You know,
with no incidents and really just like guys controlling from the infield on a couple of handheld radios. And so we have to train to that standard to be ready to go anywhere and, you know, fit into commercial airline verbiage and standards.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and then that was my when I was 19.
Very impressive.
And then after that, you go to airborne school, you go to survival school, SEER, and then combat control school, where you kind of learn the tactical part of being a combat controller, where you're learning demo, communications, land nav, small unit tactics, assault zones, which is basically setting up an austere runway, and then putting it all together. And then you get your red beret, similar to how SEALs get their trident, and then continue training. And then so after we get our red beret, we get into advanced skills training, which is now special tactics training squadron, and continue training. So that's when you go to dive school, free fall school, and then a whole bunch of added, basically on-the-job training. And getting better at your skills before you get pushed to a actual unit.
Now, whenever you do deploy, how is it that they deploy CCTs? Now, I know Air Force Special Warfare is in a evolution stage right now, and they're probably going to start making Air Force packages, you know, that has peoples of varying skills all that deploy together. But as I understand, don't you augment into other spec ops units?
Yes. That's primarily the way that we employ, is attaching to any special force ODAs or any SEAL teams. Although, you know, the last couple of years, and even while I was in the SEALs and the Green Berets and the Marines would also, they'd send their guys to the JTAC force because it was actually written in the ROEs that, hey, you've got to have a JTAC on your mission. Well, you know, hey, the services are going to start doing that, but there's a big difference in training between a guy that's been to air traffic control school and can understand the entire development and how the stack works to a dude that does a JTAC course that takes a month and then has a lot of other priorities.
Right.
And so that's the primary way, is we attach, you know, one guy to the team. Now, we do also have an assault zone reconnaissance team. That was actually my first deployment. So we'd go out and survey a dried lake bed or a runway, a pre-existing runway, or just find places to see what's there and then use that for follow-on operations. And that was kind of the beginning of the unilateral mission for the Air Force. Now it's kind of shifted into, hey, well, they've said, Air Force needs to grow up and start doing missions on their own. So I don't really know what that looks like nowadays. And I'm giving you the, 2006
sure.
to 2015 time frame.
Sure.
Special warfare, man, that's another ball game. And so I'd be giving you a disservice if I talked to you about that.
Oh, yeah. It's all right. I just know it's evolving. The world's evolving. All military units evolve, changing standards left and right. And, things are fluid, definitely. So I guess my big thing, the importance of a CCT compared to a JTAC, you would probably be better suited for like tier one units, correct? Do they put a lot of CCTs with tier one units?
Absolutely right. So we have five separate, we have a couple different tier two STS units, and then mm-hmm. one special tactics squadron for the tier one guys that supports Delta and six. And so that I ended up doing that the last couple of years I was in, and that's basically being prepared to do everything as a one man operation,
right.
which is huge, and a great time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's world class, man. No kidding. All right. So you were in from, what did you say, 2006 till 15?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, thank you for that. That's some busy time in our world.
Definitely.
For sure. How about now? How have you transitioned out of the military? And did you find GORUCK being a good, helping tool in making that transition a little easier?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually bought into a ownership of a CrossFit gym when I was still in the Air Force. And so I became, part owner of this gym right outside of Fort Bragg, and kind of saw it as a hobby. I love training. I love teaching. And so I got into that world and then saw that as kind of my transition program when I decided to not re-enlist and then I had a daughter too, which softened me right up. And so
that'd
I said, hey, I want to spend more time focusing on business and family and maybe not so much time hitting deployments. And so I made that transition and really focused on digging into that in 2015. And then from there, I had a couple built the business and really enjoying the world of being an entrepreneur. But I really missed traveling, right? And I missed those TDYs and kind of the team time of like, man, getting in the suck, right? Of we're in the middle of nowhere and we got the tick on our back and we're trying to accomplish a mission. And so it was about a year and a half that I was out. And then one of my members who I actually deployed with, he came back and was like, hey, Dan, I want to train with you. And we'd train every day at lunchtime. And he started telling me about this thing, GORUCK. And he was having a great time doing it. He said, I think you'd love it. What do you think? But you got to do an event first. And so I was like, hey, man, all right, well, let's see what it is. And I didn't understand it at all. But I just showed up at 9 p.m. on a Friday night and said, hey, all right, let's see what you got. And so for guys that don't know anything about GORUCK, it's really a team building endurance challenge modeled after special operations. And so in that little microcosm of a night or a mission or a ruck, there's so many different leadership principles that you can plug in. And so for coming from a background of special operations, all of the cadre have totally different walks of life. There's SEALs, Marines, Navy corpsmen, actually, and then combat controllers and primarily special forces guys. So mm-hmm. Berets yep. that are leading these events all over the nation. And so you show up and you basically go through any gate that the cadre decides to put you through. And that might look like, mental challenges, physical challenges, log PT,
team building. Yeah.
It's all about team building, right? And so you learn a lot about the guy next to you or about the other people that show up under a couple hundred pounds of sandbags. And so, and you can mix and match that in hundreds of different ways.
Oh, yeah.
And I've had a great time traveling all over the world at this point and meeting America, but awesome people, right? And so, part of our one of our taglines is like building better Americans. And I think that exposing America to hardships, right? Of, hey, my feet are hamburger right now. or my back really hurts, or all right, no food, no water, right? Or I'm going to try to drown you, right? I mean, I've taken entire classes to the pool and we've done water con sessions.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, we go back outside and we carry our rucks and fill up a Zodiac boat full of Budweisers and I get on and have them walk me for a couple miles. I mean, any task that I throw down to these average Joes, not Bud's trainees, right? Yeah. But these average Americans, man, they're suiting up and going hard at it. And that's like, I had a lot of resentment for a long time. And I think a lot of guys do from like sitting and looking at America, right?
Sure.
But man, like, I'll tell you what, I've seen more hard hitting dudes through doing Go Ruck and people that are like, you know, just in the business world or just want to feel that feeling that we all love, right? That challenge.
Yeah, they want to be challenged. Yep.
Man, it's been a really cool experience for me.
Yeah, people enjoy the gut check. You know, it's you know, a small group of people, I would say, but you've probably seen a pretty large group. I'm very much in the same way, you know, with my coaching I do here locally. You know, I get a lot of young men and women who want to serve, you know, and I've been doing this, you know, for 15 years or so. And, you know, throughout that whole time, they knew where they were going to go. You know, they were wanting to serve and go to war. And, you know, it has given me hope for the future to see that there are many Americans that are, you know, I don't know if we call them millennials, snowflakes, or Gen Z, or whatever. They're hard as hell. Right. They get after it, you know. And like I said, it gives me hope for the future for America when I see that as well. I'm sure you feel the same way about your Go Ruck world, because that is a tight community.
You know, and I think that it's even more so guys that are like in their mid 40s, right? And so yep. Rucking is one of those things that is so simple, right? It's just, hey, put some load on and start moving out. And so you don't need any background. You don't need to build a base. You just need to get started, right? You can definitely do too much, too soon, too far, too
sure.
fast.
Sure.
And end up, you know, with anything, you can find it. There's ways that you can get into it, but the entry level is so simple. And so guys that maybe lost fitness for whatever reason, right? Maybe they focus too much on their own business or family and put on the dad bod.
It happens.
And I see guys fight back. I mean, I was talking to dudes losing 100 pounds. I mean, and they find that mental toughness through these hard, hard challenges. And then a cool community of folks that are just, you know, kind of, and so what we've tried to become now is like that running, you know, the jogging phenomenon in the 90s and 2000s to, hey, well, all right, well, you know, put a ruck on and you can strength train and get your cardio at the same time.
Yeah.
That sounds cool. That sounds cool to me.
Yeah. Two for one deal.
There you go.
I like that. So I know we're remote and you've made the, Two Through and After podcast international today. What has gotten you down to Africa?
So I had a unique opportunity to move out here and build it on a boutique hotel. And so my wife is from Morocco and we visited out here just as a vacation and man, I fell in love with it. It's super diverse. I've never been to a place as diverse as this.
Yeah, it is.
And it's, you know, as climate goes, it's like, you know, it's like California, Arizona, Florida, Iraq, and Afghanistan kind of rolled into one, sitting right below Spain. And so, you know, it's cheap, it's safe, and it's relaxed.
Nice.
And so, big market out here to kind of grow another little empire. My business stuff in North Carolina, I've built an awesome team of guys that are running things on a daily basis there. And so I was able to kind of separate back, take a little different approach on business stuff and kind of diversify the assets. And so we're in the process of building out a 9-bedroom hotel, basically, and my goal is to set up like a safe house for guys that want to experience this culture, but maybe not get shot at. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and this is a, you know, it's primarily an Islamic country, and,
sure.
But it's very tolerant And man, like, I'm having a great time out here and hoping to share this experience with other people.
Oh, that's really cool, man. And I'm sure your wife is happy to be, you know, in Morocco as well.
Well, she actually has probably more special operations experience than I do. And, well, maybe a lot of other folks. And so we actually like kind of linked up through some weird by with and through ops. But you know, it was a good lifestyle change for us. And,
nice.
And you know, everybody's got different phases of life, and this one made sense. So
that's really cool. Good timing. Yeah. So, I noticed your hat says, Ruck Wrap on it. Yeah. What is that? I know you have another side of your business that you are, putting out there as well. What are you developing right now presently?
So, well, back to my first event that I ever ran, you know, it was a Air Force light. And so basically showed up to this Air Force base, put these guys through the ringer, smoked them, burned them down. And we finished, and my wife, who's an extreme athlete as it is, we finished and she was like, hey, all right, well, that was great and all, but what do you do differently, right? How are you any different than any other cadre? And she like challenged me to say, all right, well, what can we bring to the table that nobody else is? And so through CrossFit and competitive exercise and strongman and just being an athlete, I started using these compression bands. And so Voodoo Floss, if you're familiar with it,
oh yeah,
brought kind of on the mainstream fitness world by Donnie Thompson, who he's an extreme power lifter, 3,000 pound total. And so I learned it from him 10 years ago. Well, I started doing these things and basically, man, hey, if you're rucking, your ankles are probably hurting, your knees take a pounding. And so adding a layer of compression before to warm up, during if you have pain, and then after for recovery has shown huge results and it's been awesome. And so, you know, we get into an event and then people start limping or having knee pain and we just do this wrap, right? It's a thin latex band that you put on for 3 to 5 minutes. And what it's doing is it's compressing down on the tissues and moving. And as you move through the range of motion, it's actually working on the fascia. And then it's also working through a process called intermittent ischemia. Ischemia being the lack of blood flow. And so as you're going, you know, it's kind of, you're losing circulation. It's almost like a tourniquet effect. And then you take the band off and you get a flush of fresh blood to increase circulation, and almost like a theory of like blood doping.
Sure.
And so I've added this in, and then, hey, if you're in the backcountry, well, and you go down on you sprain your ankle, you can wrap it up, throw your boot back on, and get off the X or out of that scenario that you're in. And so eventually went through a couple of years of teaching this and showing guys techniques, how you can maintain your machine. And because all men and operators or women that are out getting after it should be able to take care of themselves. And so adding little tools to the toolbox of knowledge and equipment that you can take with you in your gym bag or your ruck or, you know, your kit that you're taking on target. And so finally
that's
gave away.
That's a really good idea. That's a really good idea.
And so it's been huge for us. Finally gave away my last band and I was like, I think I'm going to make this a business. And so I'm a serial entrepreneur, had a gym, a coffee shop, yoga studio, basically, man, all kinds of different little businesses in North Carolina with,
nice.
Which is a collective. And it's still awesome. But Ruck Wrap has kind of evolved now into basically gear that can help you solve tactical problems, all body stuff, right? So with an athletic and a tactical focus. And so, you know, putting out these things that athletes use, like gua sha, right? Physical therapists use scraping techniques to cause minimal trauma, you know, mini acute trauma so that your body heals itself faster. And so little things like that. And Ruck Wrap is the brand and creating all, you know, America jobs. I've got a bunch of awesome partners with this that are guys that are actually making the equipment and building the American economy.
I love it. I love it. So where can people get the Ruck Wraps? Can you buy them online?
Ruckwrap.com.
Okay.
You know, unfortunately through this whole COVID thing, man, we blew up and I actually totally sold out of my floss bands.
Nice.
So we've been on a back order, but they'll be in, you know, by the time this airs, hopefully they're sitting Indiana right now, but man, it's been huge. It's like, you know, guys can actually use it as a training band to help, you know, do banded pull aparts and face pulls and a lot of assistance exercises that can help fill in a lot of weak areas that you might have in your own training.
That's really cool. So tell me, like, how did you use it during a go ruck? Like, somebody has a knee that starts hurting them?
Right. The most common thing is knees. And it can, you know, the knee being a stability joint, you're feeling inputs from ankles, calves, knees, and hip, quads and hips. And so if anything is tight in there, you get a pull or a pinch or some kind of aching pain in the knees. The most beneficial is for the ankles, right? Mm. And so I've seen more dudes sprain ankles just stepping a pothole or off a curb or, you know, hey, my foot from plantar fasciitis. Well, we're going to wrap it and pretty tight, right? Like a firm handshake, and leave it on there for a couple minutes, go through a couple different exercises, and then you get a flush of fresh blood pushing in to help with swelling, right? Because if you're slapping our feet on the ground for 10,000 steps, right, on a short ruck, and so anything you can do to, you know, increase that blood flow and fix the tissues while you're in the event is going to be huge. And then afterwards, you know, recovery starts as soon as you're done training. So I kind of came up with this little CREAM acronym to replace RICE.
I saw that.
Yeah, man. So yeah. RICE being rest, ice, compression, and elevation. Well, I think we can do better than that. So if we start opening up our mind and saying, hey, well, from trauma, right, from training, we're going to add in compression, rest, energy work, aqua and aminos, because we've got to look at your diet. And then keeping a mobile mindset, right? Because, hey, we got it. I don't want to just be able to squat just like all the way down just because, but as an operator, we need to be able to move up, down, over, perform on an obstacle course, but also carry heavy loads over a long distance in awkward ways. And so that ties in a lot of different training modalities. But replacing RICE on how you should recover to CREAM, because ice really belongs, like, you know, in your whiskey or in your ice cream. And I think there's a lot better ways that we can get guys to recover and then get back in the fight.
Yeah, absolutely. I have been adding compression to recovery. Yeah, absolutely. Especially in the last, since I've turned 40, in the last decade, it's been very helpful. You know, and you're right. It helps with mobility. It helps with inflammation, you know, I don't know. I've never really compared it to ice, which one's better. I still do both.
Sure.
You know, it seems to, you know, both together even, you know. But what do you think
there? The idea there is that if you're icing something, it's great for, like, you know, reducing maybe swelling or pain, right?
Yeah.
And so we're numbing our pain receptors. But if we're looking at your body's natural push to send, you know, everything in your blood to recover that, I don't want to slow that down with the icing process. I want to speed that up by pushing out swelling and bringing in fresh blood and fresh nutrients.
Sure.
Hit HGH, right, to recover that injury or trauma that you've created. And so ice, you know, I think that there's a place for it maybe in, like, contrast, showers, you know, going back and forth. And definitely, like, overheating scenarios,
sure.
But as a way to, like, prep for your exercise, to get the blood flowing. There's just way more instances where compression will work, where ice could necessarily be, you know, taken out, and then we can do other things, right? And really focus. I think the biggest thing is nutrition as well for guys.
Oh yeah,
is getting healthy with it, reducing our inflammation.
How many times have you seen, you know, in those go ruck challenges, just two little things, you might be perfectly prepared physically to handle a go ruck. And then two little things such as hydration and amino acids, or no, electrolytes, completely wiping you out.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, that's a showstopper, right? You can't out-train that. You got to have a game plan for it, because it's going to hit you before you know it. And so you got to learn that part of your game, and everybody does. It just takes time.
Yep. Absolutely. Wow. So Tell me this, what other ventures are out there? Where can people find out more information about you? That you're doing on a larger scale, like the Ruck Wraps and the, you know.
So Ruck Wrap, man, and we're really, our biggest focus is education, right? And so helping people solve their problems, whatever it is, and prepare for the next adventure or athletic endeavor that they're coming up for. And so, you know, selection prep is huge. We're huge at the AS assessment and selection course. There, I mean, all the studs are getting on to it. And so ruckwrap.com, man, shoot us a DM on Instagram, whatever. We'll help you out in connecting people with people. Nice. I think that's the biggest thing. And we're kind of in a transition phase to broaden our scope and to bring more assets to the fight, which is going to be a lot of fun. And that's an evolving thing. On top of that, man, like I'm the director of training for Go Ruck now. And so opening up to training on a broad scale for sandbags and rucks, you know, nice. Post-COVID, all these gyms are shut down and people can't get into a barbell, and Go Ruck has world-class equipment and sandbags and rucks, and what do we do with it, right? And so I've started programming for, you know, a large group. I mean, I think there's 700 people following right now, and it's pretty cool, man. Like, all you need is a bag of sand and a backpack, and we're going to get after it. And so using an app called Beyond the Whiteboard, but it's, you know, you can train any way you want to, but building that community has been huge, and really teaching people how to get ready for the next step. And so, if you got a question or an issue or want to connect, Go Ruck is a great place to do it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They have some great, groups on Facebook and, you know, the Instagram, you know, you're very helpful. You know, the whole community is very helpful. You know, I can't tell you how many people I know that are all in with Go Ruck.
Yeah. And they've kind of taken that, you know, CrossFit early on was all about community, right? And that's that, like, group fitness. Shared suffering is way better with a buddy. And if you've got somebody to train for, you know, I know, like, you guys train it up for a selection prep or buds or something, man, having somebody to push you, environment is everything. Right? Mm-hmm. And so just having training partners or a goal. And so the Go Ruck Challenge or Go Ruck Light or the Heavy, which is the 24-hour event, I mean, those are no kidding. Those are significant events.
Yes. Right?
And so having something on the calendar that says, all right, Dan, I need to be ready on 1 September for this 40-miler or even a 50-miler, because now that's like somehow that's become the standard, which blows my mind. It's pretty amazing. I mean, guys like regular Joes getting out and crushing 50 miles in under 20 hours. Chew on that, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's now the standard of this rucking community. And I was just thinking about this morning as I was training. I was like, man, it's crazy. Like, you know, you get shammed now if you're doing like a 26 miler. It's like, what are we doing, man? We're out there like doing crazy stuff and finding out what people can really do, right? And so, you know, It's been an amazing experience, and I'll keep blowing the horn on it all day.
No, I love it. I love programs that teach you that your body is 10 times stronger than your mind will typically let it be.
Definitely.
You know, now there's obviously a lot of mind power that goes into that, but there's a significant part of your brain that you have to shut off in order to do those kind of events. You know, that part of the brain that's saying, you know, you really shouldn't do this. This is kind of stupid. You know, you go back to sleep, you know, hit snooze five more times, you know, that lazy part of your brain that's really wants you to survive and not get hurt, you know, but it really is amazing what your body is able to do. You know, with some progression training, but also just in an emergency, you know, and that's what we're trying to do here in my world is, you know, and yours too is, you know, create people that are assets, you know, not someone that needs to be, you know, helped in a survival situation or a life or death situation, you know, that they're able to carry their buddy or their family members out of a house that's on fire and, you know, help somebody. That is tactical fitness.
Absolutely.
That is
exactly, and being prepared for that. I was just talking to one of my guys about that, is like having that mindset of, you never know what the operation is going to look like for that day, right? And every training day that you put in is preparing for today that might look like a street fight, or it might look like, hey, we got to get out of the city, right? Or you have to save your buddy or drag somebody. And so preparing every day like that, those hard training sessions, it does something to your mind, right? It opens it up, shuts down the little voice that sucks. Yeah. And so opening up that capacity, because you can always do it, right? I mean, you can find the grit, and you might say, oh, well, I'll just rise to the occasion. That doesn't happen, right? You lower yourself to your level of training.
Yep.
And so putting yourself in those stressful situations, you know, stress inoculation is huge. And I think that's a huge part of my training that I do, is like, man, just put yourself in these stressful situations, because stress makes you strong.
Yep. And that's what your group is buying. You know, you're all these groups are wanting to just be better prepared for those type of situations. And, you mm-hmm. know, to be able to access somebody like yourself that has endured, you know, the types of stress the military brings, you know, the type of stress inoculation that the military brings, you know, into a training world is really invaluable. You know, they're paying for it, but it goes well beyond the, you know, the value of a dollar. You know, it's a life-changing process that you're teaching people.
Sure. Well, I think that's part of our duty, right? And you've been doing it for way longer than I have, is sharing your message and sharing your gift with other people so that they can absorb it, and so that it doesn't die with you, right? If your experience and everything dies with you, what's it worth, right? And so I've challenged all of the GORUCK cadre, all of the operators that I know, of like, hey man, like, we're in some weird times right now. Go knock on your neighbor's door and start training them up, right? Invite them to come train. Invite them out for dinner. Invite them to the range and start building your assets. Because your neighbors and your friends are the only assets that you have. And so, yeah, you might have gone to war and, like, you know, that was cool, right? Congratulations, thanks for your service. But, like, don't let it stop, right?
Yeah.
And so you should take that on as, like, a personal challenge so that you don't get into that loneliness, right?
Yeah.
That guys struggle with, man. Build your own team. And if I can pass a little bit of what I've done or a little bit of what I know onto somebody else, that's mission success for me.
Absolutely. That's really great advice too. That's one thing I did here locally. My son is 16, just turned 17. And I was just noticing, like, all his buddies in the neighborhood just had nothing to do. I mean, I was just like, you know, I said, all right, here's the deal. Every day, 11 a.m., meet right here. We are working out. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, because these are all athletes with no sports. All their sports were canceled, you know, and they're just depressed. You know, I'm like, we're going to get after it every day, 11 o'clock. And it has been such a fun summer, you know,
nice
for me and
That's
them,
awesome.
You know, and they're seeing gains, and, you know, it kind of gives them a sense of, you know, there's something going on every day at this time. You know, it gives them a little sense of that clockwork that they're so used to, and training, and, you know, 'cause it's really easy to get out of that, you know, when it's gone, you know, and I think that's where a lot of us as former athletes or former military, as we're transitioning out, when it's gone, it's really easy to get out of, you know, that mindset of doing something. And I think you're definitely on to something with, you know, how you're instructing your students.
We just got to have a little bit of structure, right? And I think a lot of guys, like, that lose that military format, that there's enough organizations now out there that can help everybody. I don't care what your weird niche is that you love doing, right? There's something for everybody now. You just got to find that crew to run with. And so for young high school dudes, I mean, man, kudos for training those guys. Like, that's a recruiting effort, right? And
so fun.
And so, man, it's got to be a blast to see guys change physically and mentally, but that can happen on a broad scale, no matter how old you are. And so I've like, with middle-aged dudes, you know, everybody needs you need a team, right? You need some kind of fellowship and brotherhood, or, you know, inclusion, that you can feel like you owe it to them, right? Because what would you be willing to do for somebody else that you're not willing to do for yourself? And so, like, man, if I have somebody to show up for, I'm gonna wake up at 4:30.
Right? Oh yeah.
But if it's just me, I'm probably just gonna chill. I'll sleep in, and I'll still put in the work, but I'll do those things that are, like, you know, unpleasant if it's a group, and that's where the real growth is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I made a post yesterday. I was like, hey, it's nice to have a buddy, you know, for morning runs. And then I took another picture, but it's real nice to have 10 buddies for these hill runs, because these hills suck.
Yeah, for sure. You
know? So, yeah, the bigger your group, the more support, the more you're going to push yourself. So, definitely. 100%.
Definitely.
So, what's next, Dan? I really appreciate your time on this. What is next for you in the world of Dan?
Man, I'm just going to keep one day at a time trying to – make somebody else better every single day, right? And it might just be through fitness, recovery, right? Some kind of, like, you know, if you're struggling, I'm gonna try to help somebody out, and building businesses that support that. I love building people, and I love building businesses, and so that's what I'm focused on a daily basis, and kind of creating environments as well. You know, I've got a really cool environment at the Collective in Spring Lake in North Carolina at Fort Bragg, basically, and, like, improve the foxhole there. Lived at Fort Bragg for 10 years, and it wasn't real sweet when I was there. But man, like, if you can go somewhere for fitness and coffee and body rehab and get, you know, relax in nature, with the environment that was created there, well, you're going to be a little bit better.
And that's so for perfect.
Me, just keeping on building on, the little businesses that we have, and having fun along the way, doing as much fun stuff as I can on my adventure.
I love it. Now, you mentioned a hobby that you like to do with scuba diving. What organizations are you helping with scuba diving?
Yeah, man. So Force Blue is actually an organization that I got into that takes special operations trained divers and repurposes our skills for ocean conservation.
Nice.
And that's been something truly, like, life-altering, to open your mind up from not just your community, but, like, a world sense. And it's been huge. It's like, I've been on a couple of really cool, like, scientific diving missions now, where we're actually having positive effects against diseases in the ocean that are affecting coral reef that are hundreds of years old. And it's been kind of a continuation of diving, which was miserable in the military, and yeah. And being out and having a lot of fun with it. So Force Blue has been a really cool chance to get in the water and give guys, like, brotherhood, right? A mission, and focus on something that's bigger than just, like, yourself. And it's been a fun time.
Yeah, that's a great group. Absolutely. I see a lot of their, social media posts, and they're very exciting and beautiful waters too. You know,
oh yeah. Yeah.
So Jeez. Much different than, you know, we used to have three priorities in, you know, seal diving. It was always at night, always in murky water, and it was always cold. You needed a wetsuit. So ever since I've been out, I've always tried to find the opposite of those for diving. Had to be clear, had to be daylight, and in water that, if you didn't need a wetsuit, you wouldn't wear one.
Right,
but
right.
Anyway, it's that's really cool. I do love the ocean, and that's a great, great hobby to get involved with. So, hey, thank you for your time. You know, I would love to have you on again, but instead of a two through and after about your particular journey, maybe we'll just do a tactical fitness report on, any of these topics that you mentioned today, because, you know, we could really go in depth on, you know, some of your recovery techniques that you use. Not only recovery tools, but able to keep moving tools versus call yourself out and be, you know, injured, as long as it's not a, you know, debilitating injury, obviously.
Sure.
But some of the nagging injuries that, you know, you can kind of suck up and get through. I think that'd be a really cool topic to share, especially because I know you've seen it, whether it's foot care, knee care, lower back stuff. You know, you got to have ways of moving your kit and fixing your kit and using the wraps to help people get through those things?
Man, I break it down to simple stuff, right? Head, shoulders, knees, toes, right? What's your game plan to strengthen those four places, right? Yeah. Head, shoulders, knees, and toes.
Yeah.
And those are the things that go wrong on operators or anybody that's out getting after it primarily. And so if you can do anything to strengthen those before the fight, I'd love to get on and talk to you and really like just share what I've seen work for guys. And I'd be honored to do it.
Yeah, let's do it again, man. Thank you so much. And thanks for taking your time out of your day to do this. It's been an hour's worth of recording, and I really appreciate your time. I know you're busy with your hotel project and all the other stuff you got juggling up in the air, but, stay busy, man. It's fun. I love being busy.
That's right, brother. That's right.
All right. Thank you so much, and until next time.